Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019. Should South Sudan's next transitional government be delayed?
Nobody is willing to declare how many soldiers they have. Nobody is taking their troops to the cantonment site. And there is reportedly no money to do all those things.
And at least one analyst says implementing the revitalized peace deal is a tricky thing.
It would be really bad for people who have been expecting peace to be told that the government will not be formed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A group of African leaders meeting in Cairo have agreed to give Sudan's ruling military council 3 months to put democratic reforms in place. Egypt is hosting a meeting of African leaders on the unrest in Sudan and Libya. It's also the current chair of the African Union. Earlier, the AU had given Sudan's transitional military council 15 days to hand over power to civilian leaders. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is leading the summit. One of the two main issues being discussed is the evolution of the situation in Sudan. In Khartoum at army headquarters, the sit-in continues as protesters demand civilian leadership. On April 11th, the military ousted former leader Omar al-Bashir, replacing him with a military council. Opposition leaders are demanding a civilian government be put in place immediately, but have failed to propose the names of any candidates for office. The military has resisted pressure to give power to civilians, but it has suggested it could accept an interim government of specialists or technocrats to govern the country for up to 2 years in preparation for a presidential election. Protesters have rejected this idea, saying it would leave power in the hands of the military. African leaders also are expected to seek ways to stem the current crisis in Libya. Their commander, Khalifa Haftar, has been leading an offensive against the government of National Accord in Tripoli. Egypt says talks on Libya will include relaunching a political process and eliminating terrorism. Egypt is among the nations supporting Haftar. Leaders from Chad, Rwanda, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Djibouti are among those attending. The leaders of South Africa and Somalia were among the first to arrive. The summit is the first attempt by African leaders to deal with the two crises in Libya and Sudan. Egypt has said that stability in its neighbors is important to its own security. Days ahead of a UN-planned national conference to reach a roadmap for a political solution in Libya, General Khalifa Haftar, commander of the Libyan National Army, ordered his forces to march towards Tripoli, claiming he would purge it of terrorists. The UN Security Council is meeting today to discuss the military escalation in Libya. The U.S. and its allies say they oppose any military action and will hold accountable any faction that precipitates further civil conflict. Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shanawi about the consequences of Haftar's latest move.
Well, at the moment, I think the most likely solution is a stalemate situation. The first scenario with the LNA taking Tripoli is still unlikely to happen. They don't have the military or ground forces to be able to take Tripoli. There's still a lot of resentment to them in the city. Even if they do have kind of foreign air support, it's unlikely they will do that. As for a GNA victory against the LNA, equally, these forces are divided. They're not particularly organized. And although they're able to prevent the LNA from moving further into the capital, they haven't been able to drive them completely back. And again, they're unlikely to be able to do so. So unfortunately, it looks like a kind of prolonged stalemate where this ongoing conflict around the edges of Tripoli is the most kind of outcome. The problem with that and with all of these options really is that it's a purely military way forward. It's very difficult to see at the moment any kind of political solution or even a negotiated ceasefire emerging from this, because the political division, the conflict, the fighting is just so ramped up that actors on the ground are just refusing to negotiate, refusing to even talk about any kind of political process or political solutions to fighting as long as this conflict is going on.
Former UN envoy to Libya, Ambassador Jonathan Weiner, said that commander of the Libyan National Army, General Haftar, had told him in the past he would never be under a civilian government and he would rule Libya by decrees until it becomes ready for democracy in the future. What do you make of that?
Well, this fits with what a lot of people who have met Haftar have said, and it fits in with what he himself, what Haftar has publicly said many times in and around many of the kind of the ongoing UN political processes. He has frequently said that he does not want to be under civilian control. He does not necessarily believe that a political solution is the way forward in Libya. And he has frequently said he believes a military solution, getting rid of the so-called terrorists and his opponents, is the only way for Libya to find stability. I suppose what many people had hoped is that in the lead up to the UN National Conference that was meant to happen a couple of weeks ago, he was starting to say that he would negotiate. He had attended many of these meetings, and many people were hoping that he would accept some kind of compromise. Obviously, that has been proved to be incorrect, and it's now very, very unlikely, I think, that he will accept any kind of political solution or political way out. He is pushing for some sort of military resolution to this problem.
President Donald Trump spoke last week to General Haftar and recognized what the president termed as significant role in fighting terrorism and securing Libya's oil resources. Did such endorsement embolden Haftar?
Yeah, this was a very surprising, actually, move by Trump. So actually, just a week before, the U.S. State Department had come out with a very almost polar opposite statement, actually naming Haftar as an aggressor and reiterating that a political solution was needed and seemingly criticizing this move. So for Trump to come out and really tacitly give support to Haftar, remembering that he has called the Government of National Accord and the current Prime Minister terrorists recently, he has issued arrest warrants for them. So therefore, by supporting Haftar in this statement and his counter-terror move, Trump is effectively being seen to give a green light to continue campaign against Tripoli. This has had a lot of a negative reaction in Tripoli, but on the Haftar side, it is very much likely to embolden him. It does mean that, for example, the Egypt and UAE countries who have given Haftar and LNA air support and other military equipment previously are likely to be more willing to give that support now that they see that the US is supporting this.
That was Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Alshinawi. Some analysts in Juba say a decision by just one or two parties to either delay or form a new transitional government by the May deadline in the revitalized peace deal would be a mistake. At least one analyst says the government and the SPLM-IO are both responsible for delaying implementation of the deal's security arrangements, so they must come up with a strategy to keep the peace deal alive. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The revitalized deal says a transitional government of national unity should be formed by May 12. That is just a few weeks away, and much of the work has yet to be completed, like creating a new constitution, determining the number of states and their boundaries, and cantoning and training a unified army. Last week, President Salva Kiir said he would form the new government next month, despite rebel leader Riek Machar's request to extend the pre-transitional period by 6 months. Abraham Awolich, a senior policy analyst with the Juba-based Sud Institute, says Kiir and Machar should decide together whether to delay or form the government on time. Awolich says a Sud investigation shows the two main parties have yet to declare their number of forces as required by the agreement, something he says contributed to the delays.
Nobody is willing to declare how many soldiers they have. Nobody is taking their troops to the cantonment site, and there is reportedly no money to do all those things. Why? It means that the parties are not serious. So in my view, the right course of action is for the parties to engage in a negotiation through the JMAC mechanism and through the IGAD mechanism.
Awolich says the parties should finish the work, thereby demonstrating their commitment to the South Sudanese people.
I would encourage the parties to get into the negotiation room right now and let the mediators come in full force and weigh the cost of delaying or not delaying. And obviously, for Dr. Riek Machar, it is a matter of personal security. And we have seen what happened in 2016. So he wants to make sure that when he comes, that there would be no clashes between his forces and the forces of the government.
Awalich says one of the biggest stumbling blocks that was left unresolved when the peace deal was signed, the number of states, should not be used as a threat to delay forming the new government. Jamie Sokuk, a senior research fellow and political analyst at the Juba-based Center for Strategic Policy Studies, says if President Kiri unilaterally forms the transitional government on May 12, it would be an illegitimate government.
The indication is clearer that it won't be possible for the government to be formed on the 12th of May 2019 because all the conditions that would have led to the formation of that government are not in place yet. Starting from the transitional constitution. Yes, the Transitional Review Committee has done its work, and they presented the draft to the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs. Since then, we have not heard of the whereabout of that draft constitution up to now.
Enokuk warns that if Kiir and Machar decide to delay formation of the new government without consulting other signatories to the deal, it would put their political standing at risk.
Kiir will be forming a government outside the agreement. That's it. And any government formed outside the box, it will be his own government. It's not the government according with the provision of the agreement. The same thing, if that government is formed, Riek is outside that government, Riek is also violating the same agreement.
Okuk says IGADI's special envoy to South Sudan, Ismail Weis, must assert a clear position on what should be done to save the peace deal from another collapse. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A South Sudanese veteran politician says the warring parties that signed the September peace deal are not organized. Peter Adwok Nyaba says the armed parties had plenty of time to assemble and contone its forces during the 8 months, a pre-transitional period. He says the issues raised by SPLM-IO do not hold any ground.
The IO must be having its own, garrison. They should have been 50 forces in Agobo. Should have been forces in Magani. In Tonga, and all this. What are they doing? Who was feeding them all this time?
I cannot speak for IO, but this is just common sense and logic.
No, just as an example. I'm just giving this as an example. We are also people who can think and analyze issues and things we have said.
It looks like we are going back to square one, just like when 2016 July
but it's
happened.
Not what I mean. No, it is not me bringing this in square one.
I mean, the politics itself.
The failure of the parties.
The politics of South Sudan is going back. Why are the leaders are blaming each other? For instance, the government will say IO is not implementing the agreement, and the IO would say the government is not serious. So the victims are the ordinary people who are hungry.
They will answer that. The government will answer. The IO will answer. But for me, I'm talking as a private citizen, and I put it on paper. I put it on my website. I send it to you. Say that I want the world to know that it will be really bad for people who have been expecting peace to be told that the government will not be formed on the 12th and that you need another 6 months. And we know that nothing will move because in 6 months, you have the rains all over South Sudan.
The IO members who are listening to us would just say Dr. Nyaba is an old, disgruntled SPLM IO member who left, and he's just annoyed with the movement.
No, they have already accused you that I've been bought by the government. They have already said that I'm working in a government court. But I think they are wrong, because people are thinking linearly. They don't know that politics is a complicated thing. You organizing yourself well, in order to know exactly how you would achieve your objective, then you're just wasting your time. And this is what we have been doing since 2014. Just wasting time, because there is no strategic thinking. There is no planning. There is no organization. And that's why I had to leave in 2017.
But now, let me put it this way. How would you expect the SPLM-IO to have acted differently from what they have done?
You organize. You don't agonize, you have to organize. The IO had all the opportunity to organize. And I've written it that. You see, the mistake, you don't join negotiation before you really tell what your objective is, and now you achieve part of it. You go to negotiate in order to achieve the other half. So I went into negotiation in 2014 without an objective, what it was. And that's why they just followed what the IGAD mediators did for them. And that's it. And IGAD completely had their own, IGAD mediators their own agenda, different from what the people of South Sudan want.
You are advocating for the formation of a transitional government of national unity by May 12th.
It is not what certain, we are saying.
There are certain issues. There are certain issues that have not been resolved. For instance, security in Juba.
Why have they not been resolved? You have the mediators. You have the grantors. What have they been doing all this time? And you have the delegation of the SPLM, I think, since SPLM-IO in Juba, since when? Since December. What were they doing? Now that they are raising the alarm now.
And so you are clear that come rain or sunshine, the government of national unity, the revitalized government of national unity, should be formed by May 12th.
Of course. For instance, John, the thing is that, you know, up to now it has not been met law itself. And these people know what for better Jack and self was discussing it in the Vatican.
They went there for a spiritual retreat. They were there for a spiritual retreat, no politics. They were there for a spiritual retreat.
They could have used that as a retreat in order to resolve some of this. This is what I'm saying in my paper. This is exactly what I'm saying. They could have used it because you don't need to chat to the world that we have agreed or we have done this. No. Quietly, they could have agreed. And Salva is a human being. You see, he could have listened to him.
That's veteran South Sudanese politician Peter Aduak Nyaba. He was speaking with John Tanza from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, yesterday. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Outbreaks of measles are occurring on more than one continent. Find out more when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you are feeling anxious, what can you do to calm down?
Do what I like to do best: read the Bible, watch movies that would educate me, and then read books as well.
You are in such a kind of situation, you have to calm down. Don't take any action. Just relax, sit down. It can even take you to a situation where you can lay down your ribs to have a relaxation so that at least your memories and your positive thinking will come back to you.
I usually like to listen to music when I'm anxious. I listen to music that will make me feel free.
I encourage myself. Sometimes I put music on. I play, dance alone in my room. And that gives me the excitement to move on, because every situation is not permanent. It will change the next day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we are talking about vaccinations against measles. It is World Immunization Week, and we're focusing on a disease that could be eradicated from the earth just like smallpox was, and as international programs are doing with polio. But instead, as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, this deadly disease is making a comeback in Africa, the United States, and elsewhere around the globe.
Measles is a disease that is only found in humans, so it could be completely wiped off the face of the earth, just like smallpox was. But despite a highly effective and safe vaccine, measles is making a comeback. In the first 3 months of this year, the World Health Organization reports that the number of measles cases has tripled over what it was last year. In Africa, the situation is worse. Africa saw a 700% increase compared to last year. Dr. Anthony Fauci heads the research on infectious diseases at the National Institutes of Health. He says in Madagascar, the case is dire.
Madagascar has almost 1,000 deaths. It has, you know, tens of thousands of infections.
The National Institutes of Health warns that a decline in measles vaccination is causing a preventable global resurgence of this often deadly disease, including in the U.S.
1 in 10 children who get infected with measles will get an ear infection that could cause deafness. 1 in 20 would get pneumonia. 1 in 1,000 would get brain swelling, what we call encephalitis. And 1 to 3 per 1,000 would die. So to say that measles is a trivial disease is completely incorrect.
Dr. Walter Orenstein at the Emory University Vaccine Center has spent his life working to end measles. He says the complications are worse in poor countries.
You start off with children who are already at greater risk. They may be malnourished. They may have immune system compromise. They may have underweight, and they may have no access to health care. So measles is a big killer.
You have a 90% chance of getting measles if you haven't been vaccinated and if you come in contact with someone who has it. Dr. Rebecca Martin heads the CDC's Center for Global Health. She's working to rid Africa of measles.
So it's very infectious. And so it will find everybody who is not protected against measles.
The solution is to get 2 doses of the measles vaccine. That may mean educating parents about both the disease and the vaccine. Equally important is making vaccination a priority of health systems worldwide. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
The UN World Food Program says it lost nearly 100 tons of food aid destined for South Sudanese after a motorboat transporting it capsized and sank in the River Nile on Sunday. The head of the boat trade union in Jonglei State says the WFP boat was overloaded. Deng Gai Deng has this report for VOA from Bor.
A World Food Program officer who declined to be identified because he is not authorized to speak to the media says WFP hired 8 motorboats to deliver relief food from Bor in Jonglei State to Pangak State. He says one of the boats began to fall apart and sank with 90 tons of food on board. South Sudan in Focus tried to reach WFP spokesman in South Sudan, Thompson Fihiri, for comment, but his numbers were switched off. An emailed request for comment elicited an automatic out-of-the-office response. Speaking in Dinka, Elijah Thong Bor, secretary of the boat trade union in Bor, which represents commercial boat owners in the area, says WAP had contracted to use a number of boats on Sunday to transport food.
Its boats were loaded here in Bor at hotel by WFP to take food to Pangak State. Unfortunately, when these boats were on their way sailing on the River Nile, one of them broke and sank with all the food at a place called Achier.
Thong Bor says the boat sank because it was overloaded and warns other boat owners it is never a good idea to overload their boats.
Boat kichukuping mana de kichoye donko.
This motorboat was supposed to carry 80 metric tons only according to its capacity, but they loaded it with 90 metric tons. Now the problem is with some boat owners, we have realized that they allow their boats to be overloaded so that they can get more money, but that is not good.
Speaking by phone from Pangak State, Pangak Information Minister Pajuk Bom says the loss incurred by WFP will negatively impact thousands of people in Pangak State who needed the WFP food.
Because we are now reaching the rainy season, so let them hurry so that the community that they cook will be enough for the rainy season.
Bom says more than 280,000 people live in Pangak State and many of them are in dire need of humanitarian assistance. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
Ugandan police have placed musician-turned-opposition lawmaker Robert Chagulani, popularly known as Bobby Wine, under house arrest. The detention comes a day after police dispersed his supporters, gathered at a beach resort where he was planning to hold a news conference and concert. Halima Athmani reports from Bobby Wine's home in Wakiso, Uganda.
Ugandan police on Tuesday refused to allow opposition lawmaker Robert Chagulanyi, known by his stage name Bobby Wine, to leave his home. Police were heavily deployed on roads around Chagulanyi's house, and all vehicles leaving his compound were thoroughly checked. Police detained Chagulanyi on Monday at a beach resort near Kampala, where he was to hold a press conference and concert. They used tear gas and water cannons to disperse his supporters and then took the opposition leader to his home in Wakiso. Chagulanyi told VOA on Tuesday he was not informed that he was under house arrest.
I'm not officially aware. As a matter of fact, right now I'm planning to go to the police headquarters to deliver my letter, as I'm supposed to do by law.
Chagulanyi then walked to his gate, where he was stopped by the district police commander. This led to an exchange between Chagulanyi's lawyer, Benjamin Katana, and police officer, Jaffa Majezi.
My orders are either you go back to your house or you'll be under arrest.
Is he under arrest now? Because for someone's movements to be restricted, he must be under arrest or quarantine. So is he under quarantine?
Yes. Yesterday you incited violence, of which you know you were charged.
Chagulanyi says Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni is responsible and must follow the law.
Does the law give me my right to earn a living from my music as a profession? Yes. Am I allowed to practice my profession? No. Has there been any sighting of the law in this blockade? No. So because of that and many other injustices that are being melted, not only on me but other Ugandans, we are calling for protests, but we want to do it within the law.
Political analyst Mwanga Chivumbi says the house arrest of Chagulanyi is Museveni's message to Uganda that he controls the state.
I have the guns, I'm in control police and prison and all these things. I'll use them to leverage my position. The people of Uganda are saying, wait, you made the law. Actually, we are being so fair to the president that you are only telling him, be obedient to the law. You are tested too.
The U.S. Embassy issued a statement on social media Tuesday, noting that Uganda's constitution guarantees freedom of assembly and expression, which must be respected. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Wakiso, Uganda.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Nambi by Sauti Sol. We've been listening to Sauti Sol with the song Nambi. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. If you'd like to share a comment about something you heard on the show, you can find us on Twitter with our handle, @VOA South Sudan. If you're planning to be out of Juba and cannot tune us on FM radio station, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 KHZ, 13865 KHZ, and 15180 KHZ. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.